This is Ethan Quinn. Last time we saw Ethan, he was in Georgia before you won the national championship, before you went pro. And now we're a year later and we're back.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Ethan.
Thank you.
Happy to be back. How has life been as a professional tennis player?
Different.
How so?
I mean, just everything.
Everything?
I mean, no longer taking classes.
Okay.
So, I mean, well, actually, I'm only taking one class.
So you're still
taking one class just to work on my degree.
Oh, fantastic.
Slowly get there. But just with that, only taking one class compared to four or five, I mean, just
that
gives
helps.
Me so much more free time.
Mm-hmm.
To really focus on tennis and what I really want to do.
Okay.
So that's probably the biggest difference. Second biggest difference, I mean, I've been to Europe twice this year, playing on clay, not on the hard court like in college. You know, it's the first part of the year. There was within 1 week I used three different balls. I was in Cleveland on Sunday using Wilson.
Yep.
And I was in Dallas, played on Wednesday.
Yep.
Using the Dunlop.
Yep.
And then I was in Delray using a pen ball. And
fun.
So it's like right away I got pretty introduced to what all these guys have been talking about. I didn't really believe it. It's like, oh, your arm's like, it'll be fine. But then when you actually get thrown into the fire, it's like, man, this is brutal. So it's a lot of differences for sure.
Can you explain a little bit about that? Because we've always been on the outside looking in. For someone using different balls, how do you adjust to that, and how much time does it take you to adjust to a new ball?
I'd say it probably takes me about a day or two to really actually feel like I'm getting used to the ball.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times they fluff differently, they bounce differently. I know myself, I'm a big fan of the Wilson U.S. Opens.
Okay.
I mean, I grew up just playing with those. College was all the Wilson U.S. Open.
Mm-hmm.
So I got really used to those. But as you go to the ATP events, most of them are Dunlop.
Mm-hmm.
I know here they're using Wilson U.S. Open, but it's on grass, so it's a little bit different.
Very different.
So, I mean, yeah, it's just your arm, the way it acclimates to the ball is so different per week.
Okay.
Really making sure that you warm up your arm is really important. I know me and Riley Opelka have just a little ongoing joke about just doing arm bands at every time that you possibly can just to make sure you're getting a bulletproof arm. And
okay.
That's really to make sure that your arm isn't getting tired and getting fatigued after switching balls and switching surfaces and doing all the things that you do on a week-to-week basis on the tour.
And for you too, besides just the balls, the amount of different types of equipment that you're using, you're currently using your Babolat Aero, correct?
Correct.
Are you using the same string for every surface? Have you had to change anything about your gear going to Europe twice, going on different surfaces? Have you been tinkering with that at all? What's that been like?
Honestly, no. I try and eliminate as much thinking about that type of stuff as possible.
Okay.
Brian, my coach, he's actually... He gives me confidence in that sense, because he's like, man, it's, you know, it's rare you see a tennis player think about or not think about all these little things.
Mm-hmm.
I know since I was 16, I've been using the same string.
Okay.
And so it's just like I found something that worked for me and for my arm. And so I try to keep it where there's not that much change year over year, month over month.
Mm-hmm.
Still using the same rackets as when I was in school.
Mm.
I switched to the Aero in my redshirt year in March. And since then, I've been using that same racket. Honestly, the same pattern, same string tension, everything.
Okay.
Obviously, week to week, if it's really hot, then I'll go a little bit tighter.
Okay.
But besides that, I stay pretty similar throughout the year.
What are you using currently for tension?
54, 52.
Do you like having two different tensions?
I don't dislike it. So. I mean, I just
That's
don't.
That's the most simple question to answer.
Yeah, exactly.
And when did you start switching, or when did you first do like 54, 52?
When I first got to Georgia.
Okay.
There's a stringer named Stanley Shukman. I don't know if you've heard of him. I know a lot of guys on the junior tour have heard of him for sure. But he told me, he's like, I really think 53, 51 will work for you.
Yeah.
And I did that, got to school, and it was so hot. And I was just like, you know, I need to go a little bit higher.
Okay.
And so I just adjusted one, and it was perfect. So,
And for you too, kind of going into your game now, what have you kind of changed, or what have you looked at to change the most going from that college junior level to pro level playing week in, week out?
Probably the physicality.
Okay.
I mean, you watch Carlos on TV and you see how physical he is. My trainer, Franco Herrero, at Forward Training in Boca, he was there firsthand. He came back and I was working with him before coming here.
Yeah.
And he's just like, you look at him and you're like, how the hell does he do that?
Yeah.
Because he's just so physical on every single shot that, I mean, mentally guys get so fatigued seeing that he's just running every single ball down, no matter how late in a match, how late in a tournament. So it's been a really strong point of emphasis since leaving school, is to really just get as physical as I possibly can on every single ball. That way, late in matches, it kind of wears guys down. When they see me hustling down balls or see me absolutely roping forehands, it's like, man, what do I do? Because he's not fading away. Mm-hmm. That's one thing I felt like in college that I really put a strong point of emphasis on, and I broke down a few guys late in the season, late in matches. I mean, NCAAs had, I think, 4 of my 6 NCAA matches were 3-setters. Mm-hmm. And just having that ability to play at a high level throughout a tournament, it wears on guys, and it just gives you a little bit slight advantage.
And when you talk about physicality, are you talking like muscle, or you think, or more on the fact of speed and endurance?
Kind of all of it.
Okay.
I mean, combine it. I mean, it's just the intensity. Hey, Brian.
Hello, sir. Should we put the forward hat on as well to like? Because I already saw I already heard the promo come out of your mouth.
No. Should we have Franco's hat on?
Immediately.
I'm gonna put pressure on him right now.
So much pressure. There we go. All right. What was that question? Sorry.
It's a good segue. Physicality.
Yeah.
Is it more muscle on your body or speed and endurance?
I'd say it's all of it, honestly.
Okay.
Being able to have the intensity on the first balls and the explosiveness, but being able to do that throughout the course of a match. I mean, it's great if you're able to do it for the first set, but you don't win matches in the first set.
Yeah.
If you're able to do it late in a second set when it's hot outside, humid, and be able to be gritty if you're down a break or something like that, it leads into the third set. I mean, this year I've only played 2 out of 3 set matches, so to have that physicality late in a second set if I was down, really to go into a third set and have that endurance, it just puts pressure on guys immediately.
And when you played the US Open too, with that 3 out of 5 set format, was that any different to playing 2 out of 3 for you?
I think mentally it's different.
Okay.
I mean, it's hard when, like, you lose the first set and you're thinking, oh man, I still have to win 3 more, and I just played for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And so I think that was the hardest part for me, is losing the first set and still thinking, okay, he still has to win 2 more, but I still have to win 3 more.
Yeah.
And so it was really hard for me to kind of comprehend that. I remember texting my coach Brad at the time. I was just like, should I set an alarm every single night for hydration, like every hour to hydrate? Like, should I wake up?
Wow.
And he's like, dude, you're overthinking it. Like, just sleep. That's the best form of recovery. Just sleep, dude. Yeah. And so, I was mentally just like thinking too much about it.
Okay.
And so I think that's the biggest difference.
Wow. I didn't really think about like the toll or the preparation for that kind of part of it, because it sounded like you wanted to be too prepared, if that makes sense.
Exactly. I wanted to make sure I checked all the boxes, but maybe I was a little too paranoid about them.
Well, now you're good.
Yeah.
And that's the best part.
Exactly.
And from going from school and having, I actually wanted to ask you, as it's like having a social life as a tennis player, do you have one?
I think I'm trying to find it a little bit more.
Okay.
I know me and Brian have talked about it a little bit. Just about
he's not paying attention.
I know. Yeah. Sometimes I certainly, when I first started working with Brian, I was really struggling with that side of things. It's just like really trying to find out who I was, and since we were working on some things, I was really struggling with like the identity. And it's like when you leave school, you have so many outlets. If you're not playing tennis well, you're able to go home, and my roommates were golfers, so I was able to go home and just not talk about tennis or really just think about other things in life. And so now that tennis is like your full
time
for pursuit, there certainly are times where if you're not playing great tennis, then it's like, oh man, my day sucked, like everything like that. But I really think over the last few weeks, few months, that we've really put together a way to, when I'm at home, have outlets to have fun and not focus about tennis. And then even at tournaments, making sure we're going out and exploring the town and trying to do things that aren't having us sit around the facility and just kind of rot around here.
And for you, what's been that outlet for you?
One of my favorite things to do, which is it's weird. Brian and Brad, they kind of call me an old soul for it. I love to like...
You!
Please subscribe.
Thanks.
Like antique shop and like vintage
shop.
Antique shop.
Is this true?
Facts.
My entire
what?
It's my entire house is like cool antique pieces.
What's like an old like China doll type thing?
No, not like
because an old, that's antiquing to me.
No. It's like no. It's like cool stuff.
What's
like,
a cool? What's like, cool stuff?
Stuff from like the like you'd go like a vintage Coca-Cola sign or like vintage like
that's not antiquing. Motor, though.
Yes, it is.
Is that antiquing?
That's modern antiquing.
I give him a day off in Boca.
Okay. No, come here. You have to speak into the mic.
Okay. He's got my hat, though.
We can't show your hairline?
No. I got a bad white forehead. No, so he came. I gave him a day off in Boca, and he texted me. He was like, hey, do you know any good antique stores around? And I was like, I could tell you where the bars are, but I don't know where the antique stores are.
Sorry, guys.
That's awesome. No, that's sick.
Don't hate on it.
What was the first antique piece that you bought?
Couch.
Shut the fuck up.
Fire couch.
What color?
All white.
You're
dangerous.
You're kidding me.
Dangerous.
Is that still in your apartment?
Sure is. Looks fire.
What kind is it?
I don't know. It's comfy. It's big. It's amazing. It's the best.
That was your first purchase.
That was my first purchase.
How
for
much?
My house.
How much was it?
It was $2,000.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was expensive. You bought a white. Is it leather or fur? I feel like I have to ask if it's fur.
Not fur. Why would I get a fur couch?
I don't know. Florida? It's a white couch for $2,000.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was a 10K couch.
Okay.
That's... Negotiate. Got to negotiate. That's what.
What did it start at?
What do you mean?
Like, did it have a starting price and you made it 2,000? Or
I think
was
it was like, I don't know, maybe it was like $4,000. I just was
okay.
Like,
so you're a haggler.
I'm a haggler.
You're a good haggler.
I negotiate.
Okay. Yeah. Is that the most expensive piece of?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it's a couch. If you're in your house, you
spend
most time
on your
couch.
What other antiquing? Like a vintage Coca-Cola sign to me could be $5,000, depending on where you find it. So I'm trying to gauge the price point.
Yeah. No. I'm not a big spender. Not at all.
$2,000
for a couch. That's pretty relative. If you look for couches on like a brand new couch, go to Ethan Allen or like anything like that.
Okay, fine.
$2,000 couch is pretty standard.
But that was the first. Like, how did you get into antiquing?
My mother.
Explain.
My mom bought a house in Athens.
Okay.
And every single piece of furniture in the entire house. I mean. Not like mattresses or things like that,
okay.
But for the most part, everything was antiqued.
Yeah.
And I went with her for most of it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, like this is pretty cool. Like being able to like find relatively old pieces that have like character and they're not like modernized.
Yeah.
To be able to get them for a lesser price. Just seems interesting because every place around the world has unique pieces and I mean, we travel for tennis anywhere in the world. So you can go somewhere and there's something you might see that you'd never see in Florida. So I just find it interesting to like kind of get a look at, all right, what's here in comparison to Cleveland, Ohio.
Well, that's going to be that's black and white.
Exactly. And that's what makes it fascinating.
Do you bring anything back or like
rarely?
Really?
Rarely. Unless it's like
why?
Because it's I don't know how I can fit some things in my suitcase. I mean,
well, it doesn't have to be a $2,000 couch. It could be something
small pieces.
Else.
Small pieces, yeah.
Like what's been the most unique piece that you've brought home?
That's a good question.
Have you brought what's the most recent thing you brought back then?
Probably my TV stand. Yeah,
the TV stand.
Yeah.
And where did you get that?
That was in Boca. So
that was
like,
in Boca.
I could easily bring it home.
Okay,
that's the.
Can you easily bring a TV stand home? Well, if you live in Florida, yes.
Yeah. Okay. I would say no. Yeah, no. I don't. Most recently, I'd probably say in Indian Wells, I got a few shirts.
Okay.
Got some vintage, like, old shirts.
Well, that's thrifting. That's not antiquing.
Exactly. But I said antiquing, thrifting.
I don't think you said thrifting, though. No, you said antiquing.
Run it back.
Okay. We'll check the tape. But I think that's fascinating to me because I feel like, do you talk about this with any other players?
Not really.
Or is this just you?
It's my thing.
It's your thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what to. I don't know how to transition that. I really don't. So for you living, do you live by yourself?
I have Garrett Johns, Dork or not Dork.
I have
Duke. Yes. Duke superstar.
Yes.
Yeah. So he moved in with me after school.
Okay. And now what? You've always lived at home since college?
What do you mean?
Like, have you been? How's it like being independent as an adult with not just one roommate, but now adult responsibilities?
It's. I mean, when we're in Indian Wells. I lost to Kipson at like 11:30 at night. Mm-hmm. in Indian Wells. I got home after doing like all my stuff.
Yeah.
And I wake up the next morning and I get a phone. I have like 20 missed phone calls. My water leaks through like my like the toilet or something, like got unclogged or got unscrewed, and it leaks through the wall into the maintenance room.
Nice.
Of my building.
Fantastic.
And so that was a rude awakening to adulthood, of doing your job and being tired, to then waking up and everything being like screwed up and having to pay for the rehab or whatever it's called.
Reconstruction of,
yes, it, yes, was brutal.
The rehab.
Yeah, that was brutal.
No, it's a good word to use in your line of work.
And then, yeah, and then I came back from another, and we were in Europe. I came home and my entire air conditioning had frozen.
That's cool.
And this is in Florida in the summer. So I get home and my apartment's like 80 degrees. I'm like, this is awful. Awful. So
So you left it running?
No. I turned it off, but then I didn't know you had to like slowly get it back to where you wanted.
What?
Yeah, I always call Brian if I have an issue. If I don't know how to, when I had to first use my Costco card, I was so pumped about it. But then I get to the gas line and there's 100 people behind me and I didn't know how to use the Costco gas card. And so I'm stressing out. People are honking. I was like, Brian, what do I do? What do I do? And it was too late. I had to drive and then
I drove away.
I drove and went back in line because I was so stressed out about using my, I didn't like people honking at me. It was stressful.
Well, it is stressful. Of course it is.
I didn't know what I was doing. So
well, no one really does until it happens.
Yeah,
that's,
you gotta
the
learn
point.
From it. And what? So now I'm a master of Costco.
Is Costco your favorite place to shop at?
Costco is an amazing place to shop at.
I love Costco.
$17.99, 3 pounds of Wagyu beef.
I was about to say, what's the one thing that you always get from Costco? If you were to go for your daily Costco run, what are the five things you're getting?
I'd go, let's go Wagyu beef.
Yep.
Avocado.
Yep.
Eggs.
Yep.
Milk.
Okay.
Can I do like fruit? Does that count? Like, that's not one specific thing, but it's like...
You can say fruit in general.
Fruit.
Okay.
So fruit.
That's the most healthy five things I've ever heard from Costco.
You can make so many meals with all that.
Mine would be 3 pounds, like a pound of candy. What's that? Family-sized Doritos.
Never got that.
No?
Not my thing.
I was about to say, the peanut butter pretzels.
Ooh,
like,
good call.
That's the number one thing I'm getting. Nothing else. Like, that's the number one thing you're getting. I guess for you two, kind of transitioning to the end of this conversation, because I feel like I could talk to you forever, but you have something to do, and you have to rest. But for you, kind of going into the back end of the season, what are you looking back at this year and saying, this is what I did well, this is what I need to improve on?
I think just learning from all these experiences.
Okay.
I mean, it's my first calendar year,
yeah,
on tour.
Exactly.
It's you know, you're playing the full season. You're,
yeah,
playing hard, indoor hard to start the, oh, I guess
depending
on where you are, you're playing the full season. And so learning the adjustments and how you can't go into the first day of hitting somewhere, mm-hmm, about the feels of it all. I mean,
yeah,
Brian and I talk about it all the time, is the first day I get somewhere, I did the same at school, is like, I always wanted to be playing my best tennis the first,
yeah,
day I got somewhere.
Yeah.
And realistically, that's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
You came off a plane, you're coming from different time zones, like you're hungry, you're tired, you're dehydrated from getting off of whatever.
You're everything.
There's a lot of things.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the one thing to learn from all of it, is just to slowly get your feels in check, and you have to not worry about those.
Yeah.
Just slowly get them as the week continues, and even the first match. It's like, if you don't play great the first match, if you get through it,
yeah,
then you have another day to get better. So
yeah, just don't be in your feels.
Exactly.
Thanks, Ethan. I appreciate it.
That was perfect.